Blog Talk Radio.
Ooh. Yeah. You already know what time it is. It's that official time. Where we take this worldwide. Let's go. Listen. So now it's time to turn it up. Surf the radio waves as we begin to burn it up. We all up in your area like landscape, definitely bringing you the power slamming pancakes. It's the mandate that you tune in. It's time to move out so we can move in and recognize that this is no illusion. I'm here to clear the air so that there is no confusion. It all started off in the book of Genesis when Jacob was wrestling with who he thought was his nemesis. And when the man saw he couldn't overpower him, he touched his hip but he really could have devoured him. And from that point then we hear a name change, rearrange the game, so now we gotta change. So I'm here to let you know it's time to listen to the Pancake and Power Slam show. Let's go!
Turn it up!
It's the Pancake and Power Slam.
Turn it up!
It's the Pancake and Power Slam.
Turn it up!
It's the Pancake and Power Slam show.
Turn it up!
It's the Pancake and Power Slam.
Turn it up!
It's the Pancake and Power Slam.
Turn it up!
It's the Pancake and Power Slam show.
Turn it up!
You are now listening to the Pancakes and Power Slam show by Crave Wrestling on Blog Talk Radio. Be sure to follow Crave Wrestling on Twitter at Crave Wrestling and join the Facebook fan page Crave Wrestling. Episode 297, ladies and gentlemen, this is the Pancakes and Power Slam show. As always, I am Chris Featherstone. Follow us on Twitter at Crave Wrestling, and be sure to hop over and join the Facebook fan page, Crave Wrestling. Ladies and gentlemen, we are three episodes away from 300. Woohoo! Big stuff. But until then, ladies and gentlemen, we're going to have weekly interviews as we do all the time, and we're going to have fun, and we're going to have exciting interviews like the one tonight, ladies and gentlemen. This person I'm excited to bring on the show. This person is a former Impact Wrestling star, former FCW star. He is a second-generation wrestler from a famous family, especially from the NWA. Ladies and gentlemen, I present to you the one and only Wes Briscoe. How are you tonight, sir?
Oh, man, doing awesome. How about yourself?
I'm doing fantastic, man. It's great to have you on the show tonight.
Man, I'm glad to be on your show.
Absolutely. So you come from the legendary Briscoe family. If I'm not mistaken, your father is Jerry Briscoe, Gerald Briscoe, and your uncle is the legendary former NWA World Heavyweight Champion. So you're an early 80s baby. And so how was it growing up with the Briscoe name?
Well, to be honest with you, When I was born, my dad kept wrestling, I think, for about another 2 years, my dad and my uncle. Mm-hmm. And then they retired, where my dad kind of went behind the scenes with WWE, and my uncle just flat out retired. He was just worn out and was done. So, like, as a little kid, I never really got to see them really much as the NWA days.
Mm-hmm.
But then as my dad started doing the Stooges and doing that, then I got to see him more on TV, and then I started knowing more about the business.
Yeah. Let's talk about the Stooges for a moment. So during the Attitude Era, for those who are listening who aren't too familiar with the Attitude Era, which many people are, most people are, Jerry Briscoe and Pat Patterson were Vince McMahon's stooges, and they Vince McMahon was a mega heel at the time, and he had Briscoe and Patterson doing his dirty work. a lot of times, especially in the ring. And basically they had many, many moments where they were just kind of played as comic relief to a very serious and villainous Vince McMahon. So you were, you know, in your teens at that time, you're in high school around the Attitude Era. How was it just being around that era of the Attitude Era and the Stooges? And what are just some things you remember from your father back then?
Well, I kind of got into a little bit of a lot of fights because everybody would make fun of my dad because of all the funny stuff my dad was doing on TV. And at the time, I didn't know that he was being entertaining. I always, you know, knew of my dad, my uncle as, you know, the great NWA wrestlers, my uncle as a two-time heavyweight champion, my dad as the NWA light heavyweight champion, then multiple times tag team champion. So, you know, I kind of was like, hey, what's going on here? I didn't really know. And, you know, sometimes kids would kind of pick on me. And, you know, of course, me being a little fiery West Briscoe, I would always fire back. And so it kind of got me in a little bit of trouble because I was like, I kind of didn't understand it. Such a, you know, age where you're trying to be cool in high school and all that other stuff, and then your dad's wearing a dress on TV.
Yeah. That's a very, very good point. As far as just, yeah, but you know, the good thing is that it really revived his character. I mean, a lot of people didn't, of course, people who understand just the legendary tradition of the NWA are very familiar with your father and your uncle. You know, it was a good way to just kind of revive the Briscoe name in the 90s. Now, what was it in particular that prompted you to pursue the wrestling business? I love speaking with second and third generation people because sometimes, you know, people assume that it's a lock that the son or daughter want to pursue wrestling, but sometimes it isn't. What's your story on that?
Well, one more thing. You also forgot my dad was also during the Attitude Era two-time hardcore champion.
That's right. That's absolutely right.
But, right after high school, I was a two-time state champion wrestler. I did boxing, karate, played football, and then I also was really into extreme sports, and I got the opportunity to become a professional wakeboarder. So I took that opportunity and got to, like, travel the world and got to wakeboard and be on the X Games and had my own professional wakeboard, the West Briscoe board that sold all around the world, and got to see a whole different, you know, style of life of living in the extreme sports world. So that was pretty crazy. And then one time I came home and visited my uncle, and I just, something came over me where I just got that itch. And I've always wrestled in the ring. I've always, as a little kid, I've always been in the ring. I've always, you know, trained when I was really little. So it wasn't, you know, something totally new, but I just had that itch to kind of go back and kind of, you know, give it a shot. I just got this weird feeling that, you know, I was just kind of meant to, you know, step back into that ring.
Yeah, absolutely. And like you said, Gerald Briscoe, your father, was really pertinent in the WWE in the 90s. And even then, before then and after then, he was very instrumental in the recruiting process as far as acquiring new talent for the WWE. Now, when you started for the FCW brand, which is now NXT, was it because of your father saying, hey, you know, kind of talking to Vince saying, hey, give me a shot? Because when I talk to, you know, different second and third generation people, they actually have stories that, you know, say that the people who are on the agents and the booking team, creative team, a lot of times they're actually harder on second and third generation wrestlers because of that level of expectation. Was it the same for you as far as, you know, when you worked with FCW? How did you get that opportunity and how were you treated backstage?
It was definitely, wasn't really treated so good, but I kind of got also signed because of me being in extreme sports. They kind of wanted to see if they could appeal to a different demographic, you know, kind of like skateboarder, the snowboarder, the surfer, the wakeboarder. So they were like, well, maybe, you know, we'll give Weston a try. And of course, my dad was also like, you know, hey, my son's a professional wakeboarder. Maybe we should, you know, see if we can pull out some different people and, you know, go that route. And then, too, like you said, backstage are always 10 times harder on you. They always expect 10 times more of you, which, you know, I don't mind because I don't mind pushing myself, but it is a lot tougher. And then, too, you know, some of the other guys, you know, kind of will hate on you because, you know, they think that you're just there because of your dad's last name or whoever, you know. They'll just, you know, just be mean to you or, you know, try not to help, stuff like
that.
Yeah.
So you had those encounters with just some veterans not being willing to help you as much as you asked?
Oh, yeah, definitely.
Yeah. And was it, did it hurt or help just your motivation as far as continuing with the company?
Oh, it always would always help. It always would fire it up. If you let that kind of stuff eat you away or get at you, then, you know, you're already defeated. So,
yeah,
you know,
absolutely.
How we, that stuff is, you know, fuel, you know, that goes out to all the listeners out there, you know.
Yeah.
Whenever anybody tells you no or you can't do nothing, don't listen to them. You can always try. You can always keep going, you know. You might not always make it to the top, but as long as you keep trying and, you know, living on your dreams, as long as you're happy and you have fun, follow your dreams and, you know, never give up.
Yeah, absolutely. So what was it that really prompted you to be released from FCW? I know that you did some work there for a little bit and you were let go. Did anyone, you know, give you a clear-cut reason why they released you?
Well, I was getting ready to debut. I was going to be at the pay-per-view the next Sunday. And at the time, me and Xavier Woods were the FCW Tag Team Champions.
Right.
And they were going to push me and Xavier to be the next really big tag team down there because we were different looking. We both best friends. We both got along. Both, you know, really vibe together, really get in the ring. And they saw that, and we were getting over really well over in FCW. And so last night, the night before I was about to debut, I was doing my finish was a double corkscrew off the top rope.
Mm-hmm.
Onto Jinder Mahal, and something ended up happening where Jinder kind of, I don't know if he didn't, I don't know, just something ended up happening where I ended up tearing all three major ligaments in my knee.
Mm-hmm.
And had to get knee surgery that took me out for about 8 to 9 months. And when I got finally healed and ready to get back in the ring, the writers and everyone said that they just didn't have anything for me. Xavier Woods was always doing another thing. Everybody else was moved forward, and I kind of just got lost in the shuffle. And,
yeah.
You know, got released.
Yeah. You bring up two interesting names, of course, Xavier Woods and Jinder Mahal. Xavier Woods now, you know, becoming a record-breaking team champion, and Jinder Mahal, you know, this year out of nowhere, really becoming the WWE champion for quite a bit of time. Now, with those names, with Xavier Woods, with Jinder Mahal, you know, you had some experience, you know, competing with them in FCW. What are your overall take of both of those names as far as their career, and have you spoke to them since they've elevated their WWE careers?
Yeah, I definitely kept in touch with them, and you know, you could see in their younger stage of the career that they were going to be good. I mean, you know, Jinder still had a little bit more work to do, but Xavier Woods was already ready. I mean, you know, he had a little run at TNA, did some stuff at Japan, and you know, he was really, really well, and he taught me so much, and I was blessed to get to tag with him because I learned a lot from Xavier, and I learned a lot about psychology and learning a lot about, you know, throwing a little bit more flashy moves in there, and he really helped me out a lot, and I was really blessed to get tagged with Xavier Woods. Him and also the Usos really helped me out a lot.
Mm-hmm.
Joe Hinning really helped me a lot.
Yep, Curtis Axel, yep.
Curtis Axel, Bray helped me out. Me and Bo were best friends. Me and Heath Slater were really, really, really close. I mean, a lot of those guys that are the top guys, you know, Johnny Curtis, Fandango, you know, a lot of those dudes, you know, were really good friends of mine. And, you know, all of us kind of stood together and hung out together. And, you know, they're all really good people. And they always helped me and push me in the ring.
So how were you able to get your spot in TNA Impact Wrestling? Of course, you were part of the Gut Check Challenge, and you kind of came in through, you know, by way of Kurt Angle. That's how they kind of made the angle at the time. So how was it that you got that opportunity to become a part of that fiber of the Impact Wrestling brand?
Well, at the time, I was living in Puerto Rico wrestling for Carlos Colon.
The World Wrestling Council, right?
Yes, I was living down there.
Yep.
And I guess one of the guys saw my look and saw my tattoos, and they were kind of interested in me. And then Bruce got a hold of my dad and asked my dad what I was doing. And my dad's like, oh, he's in Puerto Rico down there wrestling, you know, trying to get better. So Bruce was like, oh, well, why don't we bring Wes up here a little bit and just take a look at him. So they brought me out. I did a match, and, you know, they were really excited, and they were really happy with it. And they were like, well, we got the thing coming up, and we think you'd be really good in it, and, you know, we'll offer you a contract and see if you'd want to do it. And, of course, you know, I jumped right on that. You know, you can't pass the offer like that.
Of course not, yeah. So let the listeners know a little bit more about the Gut Check Challenge. Now, you know, there's people who said that, you know, it was a shoot, and some people, you know, said it was kind of, you know, fabricated a bit, as far as they kind of gave people opportunities but knew who they wanted to really bring on. How was it as far as you're concerned? Were they basically locked in of giving you a contract and kind of introduced you that way, or was the Gut Check Challenge the real deal for you as far as getting a contract or not?
Half and half.
You said what again?
It was half and half.
Oh, half and half. Okay.
If I didn't do really well, they weren't going to go with me at all. They're like, that will kind of destroy you. So either you better shine, because we have all these other people coming that are super talented, and you better, you know, step it up, because if you don't, you know, that's going to be it. You know, we're not going to use you. And to be honest with you, during that promo time when we had to cut the promo, I mean, everything I said was truthfully from the heart. There was nothing that I did not really mean. I mean, if you really watch, I kind of tear up a little bit. Because, you know, when I'm out there, I fully believe, and I give it everything I have. And, you know, this is a dream of mine. And,
yeah,
you know, hopefully I can fulfill it the way I want to fulfill it. So it was, to be honest with you, that promo was 100% real and honest. And you can hear it in my voice. You can see it in my emotions. And that's why I think the people, if you hear in the background, that was over. I mean, the people, they wanted it. So that was a good thing.
Yeah, absolutely.
So I did my...
Yeah. I think when it comes from the heart, you know, this passion and promos that, you know, people can, it resonates. You know, a lot of time you deal with crowds, they know when you are speaking from a script. You know, I think the audience kind of catches that now. But, you know, when it comes from the heart, I think people will be more prone to clap, and you'll get over more. I'm, you know, of course, a lot of people who are listening are waiting, you know, they're salivating over this question and waiting for it. And I'm going to ask it. Let's talk about some aces and eights. So how in the world were you selected out of the entire roster? How did that just chat go? How did the creative process go as far as selecting you? And of course you would be against the Aces and Eights, and then you came down from the cage, you were on Max with Garrett Bischoff. Very interesting reveal. I think with the Aces and Eights, I think it was a really, really good start to it. It kind of dulled out at the end. But I think the big reveal, you know, when people come and kind of unmask, I think people really got excited about that. It was a really good mysterious angle. And how were you selected, and what were your overall thoughts on the time span of Aces and Eights?
Eric Bischoff was the main dude that came up with the whole scenario. And that was coming from the Sons of Anarchy, from watching that and seeing how well Sons of Anarchy was. And
yep,
he just had, you know, Eric Bischoff has a really brilliant mind and came up with that gimmick. And You know, he had plans for everybody, and it was one of the best times of my life and one of the best experiences of my life. And I got to be with all my friends, all those guys that we were together with. We stuck together. We hung out together. We were together. I mean, we took this serious. We wanted it to be something very, very special.
Yeah.
We treated it like it was our baby. This was our opportunity to set an example and, you know, create something totally different, which, you know, if you look at it, that's what started the Shield. It was because of us.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, if you really look at it, we started before the Shield. We came through the crowd. We had the mask on. And what did they do? They did pretty much the exact same thing.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, I really think that we could have got a lot more out of it. I think, you know, we could have turned half one babyface, kept half heel, had a feud in between the two clubs. What really happened was that they hired two new writers, and the other writers got fired, and they hired a bunch of new people in charge, and the new people in charge wanted nothing or any script or anything to do with any of the other writers or any of the other people in control. So they scratched everything, and just that's why it just kind of just ended. And everybody's like, "Hey, well, that's kind of weird. Like, what's going on here?"
Yeah,
so that was kind of the end of that.
Oh wow, yeah. It did have a really abrupt ending for sure. Now, was Bully Ray, well, you know, I've asked this before, what was, as far as, you know, other people who were members, but I'm interested in your take on this as far as what you've heard. Was Bully Ray, was he just the guy from the very beginning, or were there other options?
I think there were other options.
But Bully Ray was the one who was selected at the end as far as being the leader.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. What are your thoughts with working with him?
Oh, he was a nice dude, and it was all right.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So you end up being released from Impact Wrestling or let go. How did that unfold as far as just your relationship ending with Impact?
It was a mutual agreement. I got the opportunity to go get to wrestle for New Japan, and at the time, TNA was cutting everybody's contracts, cutting money from everybody, and I was going to stick with them, but they weren't going to let me go wrestle for New Japan or do other things. They wanted me to strictly be with them, and I just was like, hey, there's other opportunities out there, so I figured it's best to leave on a good note, and
yeah.
Start some other different adventures.
Absolutely. And let the listeners know what you're up to now.
Oh, I'm wrestling all over the place. I'm wrestling in Canada, Montreal for GNW, Great North Wrestling. Right now I'm their TV champion for Hannibal TV. I'm in London. I go to Europe a bunch, Japan. I'm pretty much everywhere. If you want, follow me on Twitter at Wes Briscoe. It's the one with the blue check. And then on Instagram is Wes Briscoe 19. Feel free to follow me, check me out, see what I'm up to, see if I'm coming to a show near you, because I would love to meet you guys and say hi.
Awesome. It's been a pleasure, Wes. Appreciate your time.
Oh, man, it was a pleasure. And thank you for having me on your show. I really, really appreciate it.
Thank you. Have a good night.
Love you too.
Bye-bye.
Bring what you got. The measuring stick just changed around here, buddy. You're looking at it.
Four corners, free. On mine. Let's go. The whole squad is making it clear. We've taken this year. You know who we are, but you don't know why we're here. So this is where the big boys play. These big boys play like who defies the living God? Get out the big boys' way. Outsiders with the swoop in. We live as kings. You see in us, but our third man waits in the wings. And when the time is right, we shock him with the proper attack. I go for Dolo, but ain't solo. Cut the promo in black. Hollywood, Hendrix, Frizzle, pinning them
to the max.
And I'm that one mission with the strength of 100 men, with one intent to see the will fulfilled of the one who sent his son to give himself. But you rap about your gas and your rags torture, white coffins when I drop a bomb. My mic's awesome, never lost faith. You in all space, you can all skate, suffer but never crippled. No bin walls in my cross face. From here to Saturday, raving, anticipating. I was frostbit, now I am glacier, mixed with some Vader. Get to hawking with these animals, using God for my defense. In Alabama, we jamming. That's beautiful, Bobby Eaton, me and Priest. We the dangerous alliance, nah, the Harlem Heat. Tie the do rag before we do battle. You're talking sheep, you all what you speak. This too sweet.
Till the genre is took back, we repping that wolf pack. The foundation shaking, no mistaking, yeah, we shook that. Trust in God, we trust, pushing forward, never look back. Meekness ain't at all weakness, some people mistook that. Stamping out this crook rap, he turning the power on the razor's edge. Leg drop after a power bomb. Tired of the lies, man, we bringing the truth through. Diligent and fruitful, the owners in our group too. It's good to be king, sold out, this war is brutal.
We playing them war games, our army go move too. You crew, I'm in the Raptors with a bat in my hand, and stand to shatter all your plans so they don't matter. In the grand scheme, it's that easy. We tag teaming, Steiner brothers, we love it. Demand the win, establish it. This the clash of the champions.
This is where the big boys play, huh? We ain't here to play.
All right, ladies and gentlemen, 297 episodes. We are live and living Culligan, funky like a monkey, if you will, ladies and gentlemen. We're going to have so much fun. Without further ado, ladies and gentlemen, let's jump right into the show. We got my boy from Under the Mat Radio, Evan Tech Prouse. How are you tonight, sir?
Doing all right. How you doing?
But the difficulties up and fixed and everything's good. We can hear you. We can hear you live and live in color. Absolutely, man. Absolutely. We can hear you good. Can you hear us good?
Great. Yeah, I can hear you good. I'm using the Bluetooth for my cell phone, so dealing with technical difficulties all day, but we're here. It's no redo.
Absolutely.
We're live, pal. Like Jim Ross said, we're live,
no.
Pal.
We're live, pal. Oh man, what a moment! What a
oh man,
we're live, pal.
Yeah, we're live.
Oh, poor Sid, poor Sid. Yeah, that was that was something that he probably will ever regret because that's something that.
He's breaking up, brother.
Half the man. You are half the man that I am. What did he say? How did he even mess it up? I can't even mess it up, and I'm trying to. He said,
"You
are half the man that I am, and I have half the brains that
you do." Oh, man. God love it.
Yeah. God bless him, man. God bless Sid. That was one of those things that Sid, you know, that it was a weak spot for him. It really was. I mean, just as much as amazing big man and one of the best of all time as far as big man is concerned, you know, That was one of his things as far as his promos. It's like sometimes, you know, a lot of the times less is more. And once you get to the point where you're just doing a lot of talking and you're not in like your gimmick isn't created to talk too much of it. That's when a lot of times that's when the downfall occurs as far as just making sure that, you know, you're not doing and saying too much. And so I think with Sid, you know, that was his deal. It was just
Be quiet and wrestle.
Exactly. It's like when Kane, you know, when Kane lost the voice box, you know, for the most part, a lot of the stuff he said and did was just, you know, it went kind of downhill from there.
Yeah. Some people just need to be quiet. I even think with Strowman, he's talking too much.
Oh, yes. Yeah, he's definitely talking too much.
Three, four words, like Incredible Hulk. Just say a few things,
yes.
And that's it.
That reminds me of Andre. You know, Andre didn't have a lot of talking. You know, Heenan would do most of the talking. And, you know, Andre would, you know, Hulk Hogan, I will crush you at WrestleMania. You know, Heenan was just the outlet. He'd throw it to Andre, and Andre would give his sentence or two. And it made it even more, sound much more legit, you know.
Yeah. I mean, you know, when you got the great Bobby Heenan, you know, the late great Bobby Heenan there with you, or you had great managers, they could talk for you. It's Haku and Barbarian, they never had to talk. You never heard them speak on camera.
He made them.
He had great managers.
Too.
You apologize.
He made them like stars.
They're going in and out.
Bobby Heenan made them like stars too. They didn't have to do much talking either.
Yeah.
Yeah. And that's stuff. What's that?
Oh, no, go ahead.
Oh, yeah, yeah. I was just talking about how Andre, that was one of the things that a good manager would do, I think the only manager who does it now that makes it work is Heyman with Lesnar.
Yeah, of course.
Otherwise you would hear Paul say something stupid. Paul, say something stupid. That was another thing that was like, man, it's better if you don't talk. What do you think about Taker talking? Because
that was gonna mention
Bear, that. Paul Bear would set him up pretty well, and then he would just do the simple rest in peace. But eventually it got to the point where Taker was doing most of the talking, and I don't know if that was a good thing.
Well, it shows the evolution of Taker. Taker didn't need to talk because he was literally a dead man. He was literally the fighting dead, or now the walking dead. As his career grew and evolved, you can see how he started talking little by little, especially with the ministry, the grandest vision, the grandest design. It's like, what are you talking about, Taker? But he's the ministry Taker. And he just started talking like in these euphoric, like, death riddles at first. And then I think his best mic work was when he was Booker Red, when he was Dead Man Inc. as a heel. When he was just talking, and he didn't really talk too much. Like, he had the perfect length of where he didn't talk too much, he didn't talk too little. He got across what he had to say, and that was it. And I think Taker's one of the few that went for his career where he said nothing, and then he talked, and then he went back to saying nothing. And then that weird thing where when he was feeding with Bryson, he kind of talked for a couple of minutes. He's like, wait, you're talking now? And now he doesn't talk anymore. So it was just, he goes off and on. But I think Taker was successful at it. Yeah, that's pretty much how it is. Taker was able to, apologize for that, fans. We're dealing with some little technical difficulties. But you're still listening to Pancakes and Power Slams. We're Chris Featherstone as the host, and of course, yours truly, Evan Tech Prout, the co-host. Taker always was great. He went from not talking at all to talking a little bit, to talking, to not talking at all again, to where he's talking a little bit. And now, I guess, is whenever they're talking to, whenever they're ready for him to talk, they can. But, Sting is the reverse. He started talking a lot, and he didn't talk at all. So, it shows a lot of your character if, you definitely can go from back and forth. You can go from not talking to talking. So with all that being said, we are right now about to go into the headlines for the show. This week's headlines. Give us a second, fans, waiting for the music to hit. So please bear with us. We do thank you all, fans, for listening to Pancakes and Power Slams and being very dedicated fans through everything. A lot of interesting headlines we do have for you. We have a total of about 4 or 5 headlines. The first headline, I'm sure you fans listening now live or that will be listening to this archive, we're really going to trip out at this one. Because when I saw it in red, if I just saw an article on this, I couldn't believe it and just laughed. But if you get a chance, fans, as well, we definitely would like to know. You can let us know if Featherstone has everything up and coming. Let us know, fans, are you still excited anymore to listen? I mean, I listen to watch SmackDown Live. And you know, for a while, like, there we go. To our headlines, thank you for coming with that music. First headline is that Hogan, brother. Hulk Hogan challenges The Rock to a WrestleMania match, and he is very serious about it. WrestleMania 18, it was when The Rock went against Hulk Hogan, the Dream Match. They dubbed it Icon versus Icon. This match happened back in 2002. And Hogan wants to challenge him again. Hogan, I sent a tweet to The Rock, and a tweet message that said, "Yo, at The Rock, if you need another headband, this time you need to give me my rematch. Let's see if you can take it, brother. Laugh out loud. Only love, but I'm serious about the rematch, brother." HH, that is Hogan's Twitter tweet that he sent on Twitter to The Rock back 4 days ago. Definitely very funny to see Hogan challenging The Rock for a rematch from 2002. About 15 years ago, 14, 15 years ago, this match happened. I thought the match was great. I thought the match was great. Definitely a match that I didn't really expect for us to see. Around that time, of course, you had WWE. Of course, you had WWE going around. WCW had just closed less than a year. And like you said, Hogan came in. Definitely challenged The Rock. I remember watching this live. I thought it was great. And the one thing about the match in WrestleMania 18 that was kind of bizarre and memorable was that the fans in Canada actually went against The Rock and started cheering Hogan, which no one could see that coming. And you see the fans start booing The Rock and they cheered Hogan. And for, of course, Hogan to be the age he was, to me, Hogan was always had to be in his 50s since even 1983. See, like, Hogan was always 55 in my mind. For Hogan at that time to catch up with The Rock, and the match was very well paced, and this was done well, and I thought it was a very, very good match. You know, it wasn't a Rock, it wasn't a Steamboat and Flair or Bret and Shawn, but it was a great work match that definitely was done well. Of course, we remember what happened the next Monday when Hogan became a face and looking with the NWO. Definitely great times. I'm not looking forward to seeing this match. I hope this match does not happen. The Rock is not in the wrestling shape. Of course, the past few times The Rock did wrestle at Mania versus John Cena, The Rock got hurt. So The Rock is not in the wrestling shape. Hogan hasn't been in the ring in a good amount of years. But, hey, who knows? If you put The Rock or Hogan or any marquee, it's definitely going to make you money. And that's definitely something that Vince would love to do for that. Chris Featherstone will be back momentarily. So with all that being said, fans, let us know what you think. Do you want to see The Rock versus Hogan again? 15 years later, WrestleMania is famous for doing rematches. Like we mentioned, The Rock and Cena. We've seen Bret against Yoko. We've seen matches where two participants wrestled three times, Triple H and Undertaker. Undertaker against Shawn Michaels. I'm trying to think of some other matches that happened twice over the years at Mania. But definitely something to see. See, Featherstone is back. Are you there? Are you back, brother?
Brother. What you gonna do? Yeah. So the Hogan and Rock, Hogan's 64 years old, man. I mean, it's really, I think it's one of those things that he's trying to have his another 15 minutes of fame. You know, see, it makes me think of if he meant to say this Superdome instead of a Silverdome. If he said the Silverdome on purpose just to get a little bit more people talking about him. If it was a work. At WrestleMania 30 was a work.
Yeah, it is like I was telling the fans when we came back on. 15 years ago, Hogan has always been 55 years old. In my mindset, even since the birth of Hulkamania, The Rock is in no wrestling shape. He got hurt the past few times he wrestled, and
Right.
Not looking forward to it. And of course, you add Hogan and Rock, it's going to make hella money. But that match is, gosh. I mean, even the switch to TNA. When Hogan went against Sting at that one Bound for Glory, which the match, the nostalgia.
It was brutal, man.
The name by itself, of course, drew money. But and how long ago was that? What, 6 years ago?
That Bound for Glory was 2011 or 12 maybe?
Yeah, it was 12. Yeah, and it wasn't Sting's fault because Sting still could work, but it just
Sting was in t-shirt shape too, man. It was just sad all around for me. I mean, it just it was 2011, but it was T-shirt Sting in 2011 too. Now he ended up getting in really good shape when he came into WWE, especially when he went against Seth Rollins. But T-shirt Sting. It's one of those things that, man. We saw T-shirt Flair, we saw T-shirt Hogan, we saw T-shirt Sting, and we even saw T-shirt Triple H at Survivor Series, although he was plugging his own T-shirt. but, you know, eventually, if you don't, I mean, the older you get, the tougher it is to maintain a very awesome, you know, shape. And, you know, it's one of those things that if you're going to be in T-shirt shape if you don't maintain it, so. You got to make sure that you do, because you know that's one of the things that you come across when you are when you have a body, when you have a shape. Like, it's one of those things that someone like Bray Wyatt, Kevin Owens, Mick Foley, you know, all of them can get away with it, you know, for years and years, you know, really their whole career. But it's one of those things that if your gimmick is built upon having a really nice shape, where that's where it gets really tricky, you know, because you get into the t-shirt, you know, phase, you know, people are like, oh man, I mean, they start feeling sorry for you, and then you know, you don't want people to feel sorry for you when you're coming in the ring, especially if you are a legendary figure who's been around for a while. You know, I think T-shirt Flair is one of the worst cases. It got to the, especially Nitro when he was against Sting.
Yeah, the last Nitro.
Nitro. And he said that he didn't want to do it. You know, he was talking about that. He was in a terrible shape, and it just gets embarrassing when you're trying to. You know, when you built your career around having a nice shape, you know, at least a very cardiovascular shape, you know, Ric Flair wasn't the buffest guy. You know, I mean, his character wasn't known for being buff. I mean, he was in really good cardiovascular shape and in great shape, but His character wasn't known for being buff, like, you know, like a Batista or like a Sting or like a Nikita Koloff, you know. And you know, it got to the point where, but at the same time, it was a shape that, if it changed to the worse, and with Flair, it got to that point, and I just don't see. I mean, if Hogan went against The Rock, you know, he would 100% without question be in that stage where, you know, he would wear a t-shirt, and you don't want to wear a t-shirt to WrestleMania. I know for a fact, you know, based on all the people I know that WWE to talk to, Vince wouldn't make it. You know, Vince wouldn't be okay with that. That's for sure. And that's what it boils down to. Vince isn't going to be okay with it. With you wearing a T-shirt at WrestleMania, and I don't think it's going to work out for just from a physical standpoint. Now, you know, he does tweet things as far as you know, his shape now and saying that, you know, he's still in great shape, which, you know, for almost 65 years old, he's still in really, really good shape.
Oh, yeah.
But, you know, if it relegates him with the T-shirt, it's pretty much a done deal for him.
Hogan's stomach, ever since he came in 2002, was always like a countertop. It wasn't like flat. It always came out, and then it like went sunk in. And it was always kind of weird. And Hogan is in good shape, for sure. Like you say, Flair just had an athletic body. You know, you had the Stings and the Warriors and the Road Warriors and something Cornette did mention about how, you know, it's kind of tough when your body is your gimmick, or, you know, your body's one of the things that sells. It's really tough when you get older to keep it up. I mean, Rick Rude had one of the best bodies, Paul Orndorff, even Hercules Hernandez. And as we see, if you start wearing T-shirts, to kind of let you know where you're at, pretty much, at the stage. Either your body is in the shape the way you need it, or you just look flabby and nasty.
Right.
But it's an advantage to the Kevin Owens of the world that wear shirts as a part, because they can get away with it 10, 15 years from now. Their body types is not really the selling factor. You know, it was just, you know, Kevin Owens. If Kevin Owens wrestled without his shirt, it looked weird. Like when we saw Ric Flair and Sting wrestle with their shirts, it was weird. It was like, wait a minute, it don't even make sense. And the pet peeve of mine is I hate Arn Anderson, Tully Blanchard, when they wear their shirts and they tuck it in their trunk. What are you doing? That's not genius. And that's always a pet peeve of mine. I never understood. And the wrestlers wear their shirts, Flair too, and they tuck it in their trunk. Like it's a T-shirt. Never understood it, but I don't know. So I know we're speaking on Flair. I know that definitely segues to the next headline. Brother Son, if you want to go ahead and talk about it. Do apologize again, fans, with technical difficulties that's going on. As I mentioned before about Ric Flair and about wearing T-shirts and what have you, the next headline is in a recent Table for Three that just was released called Legendary Rivals. We had Ric Flair, you had Sting, and Ricky Steamboat. And during this episode, Ric Flair mentioned how he feels that SmackDown is better than Raw in many cases. And one of the things that, excuse me, Ric Flair talked about is how it had very athletic competition. He mentioned the names of AJ Styles, Shinsuke Nakamura, and Kevin Owens. So this is very interesting to see. You know, Flair is very honorable. He's a legend of legends, giving his opinion. Flair has never had a problem with giving his opinion on anything. And it's very curious to see how you, the fans, think. Do you feel SmackDown Live is better than Raw? Do you feel Raw is better than SmackDown Live? Do you even feel that 205 Live could be better than both, or NXT? But I'll say this. I feel with SmackDown, it's more athletic and it's more wrestling-based. And SmackDown has been portrayed as such for a good while. And Raw has the air quote, the bigger stars, or it's more of a show, more storyline driven. Not to say that there's not any good matches, but Raw just has a different feel, more like a worker's feel, more like a markability feel, where SmackDown is more athletic and more about wrestling and athletics and the work into the ring. So I like both shows. I can't really say which show I like better right now. It's too different for me. Two different shows, I would have to say. But I do remember a time during the Ruthless Aggression era, around the early millennium, SmackDown was the better show. It was, gosh, it was so much action. You had Ray before his left knee surgeries, and you had Baby Edge, and Christian, and Eddie, and there was so many people. that's going on. Nobody that says you cannot hear me. Hold on 1 second, fans. Holy fans, you can hear me now. I do apologize for that. I'm dealing with technical difficulties all day on my show and here on Pancakes and Power Slams. So we would definitely like to apologize. But is Raw better show than SmackDown? Is SmackDown better than Raw? There are a lot of areas where I really do enjoy watching SmackDown. There are some areas where I enjoy watching Raw for different reasons. But if I'm going to watch a show where it's strictly wrestling, I'm going to go with some more SmackDown. When I watch a show that's more storyline driven, I'm going to watch Raw. Thoughts on Ric Flair saying SmackDown is better than Raw? Definitely show. I will say one thing about SmackDown I do like is that you see more of the authority figures, more of the SmackDown, you know, of course, more of Daniel Bryan and O'Shane McMahon, where Raw, you know, you see Angle just comes out here and there. So I don't really look at him as an authority figure. I don't like how they're really using him at all. But Shane and Daniel Bryan, they use better as authority figures, and they really seem more influential. Mostly influential to the storyline. Yes, man, we're back. I apologize once again for that. As myself, Evan Tech Pro, co-host of FAKs and Power Slams, and host Under the Mask Radio. Me and Chris are still trying to work out technical difficulties we're having with the audio and with our sound, so you fans can hear us, so we can hear each other. As I mentioned before, if you fans did hear me or could have heard me about Ric Flair, said SmackDown is better show than Raw in all many cases. He didn't mention the names such as AJ Styles, Shinsuke Nakamura, and Kevin Owens. Of course, Flair is a legend, and Flair always is more towards the more athletic showing, more wrestling instead of focusing more so on the storylines. So I'm not really too surprised that Flair would think SmackDown is better than Raw. So we're going to go to our next headline in a second. And like I said, fans, we really do apologize for this.
All right, let's get this going.
Yeah.
Oh, what's going on here?
Not sure what's going
let's
on.
Get this going. Yeah, let's get this going. We're live, pal. That's 297 episodes. We're live, pal. We are good to go for the rest of the show, ladies and gentlemen.
Yes, we are. All right, I know we
were just talking about
Raw.
Flair?
Yeah, just talking about Flair and, you know, how you said SmackDown is better than Raw in the past. Table for Three with Ricky Steamboat and Sting. You know what I'm saying? It's not a... Perhaps you're not too surprising that Flair mentioned SmackDown being a better show. More to the athletic stuff and... You know, the athletic prowess of SmackDown, his daughter's on there, Nakamura, Orton, so AJ Styles. So I'm not too surprised.
Yeah. I mean, that's what he was mentioning, I mean, especially, you know, from a Charlotte standpoint. I definitely think the talent, the level of talent from SmackDown Live, you know, it has that kind of still, it has that land of opportunity feel. And I think that's with, you know, Raw still has that more sports entertainment type of feel. You know, it's kind of not as much anymore, but, you know, back in the day when Heyman was doing a lot of the writing and the creative standpoint for SmackDown,
right.
You know, he had that opportunity where he was doing a lot of the booking, you know, and it actually helped in a lot because, you know, he was talking about before that he was, that Vince McMahon was still very competitive. And so he liked the Raw and SmackDown kind of competing against each other. Nowadays, it's just kind of like, you know, full-on Vince McMahon that it isn't, you know, SmackDown Live still has that lane of opportunity feel.
Right.
But at the same time, it's like, it all feels that it's all under the same umbrella as, you know, the WWE. Like, it just, it feels as if it's a WWE umbrella. That's why the whole Survivor Series pay-per-view, that I didn't really buy it. And we were talking about that with Double T here on the show. I didn't really buy it because it all feels WWE. It all just feels like, you know, it doesn't feel like two distinctively different brands. It just feels as if there's just split.
It's just split, you know, right.
You know what I mean? One chunk of people here, one chunk of people here. It doesn't feel like a, it doesn't feel like the MLB, you know, it doesn't feel like AL versus NL, you know, like that's the biggest thing. Yeah, exactly. I was going to say that as well. It doesn't feel AFC versus NFC. And I think that's one of the biggest things with, WWE. It doesn't have that AFC, NFC feel. And I think that it's kind of to the detriment of them because it's not really working out as well.
Yes, I definitely agree. I got a little bit of happy doing the whole SmackDown vs. Raw, but in the end, it's the same company. And granted, the NFL is the same company too. You know, all of the sports events are the same company. But it's just how they're branded, and you really special doing the actual All-Star game. The best All-Star game out today is Major League Baseball. That's just my opinion.
Right.
But the way it's done, and even though they have interleague, it just has a different feel where it means something. Like, okay, National League's best against the American League best. And SmackDown versus Raw, it's just, it just doesn't have that feel. It's like, okay.
Right.
They're going against each other, and that's it.
Yeah. And that's the sad part. It really is. I mean, you know, I really hope that one of these days it has that feel to it, but right now it certainly doesn't. That's for sure. It's not. It really doesn't have that feel to it, unfortunately. And I definitely think it has the ability to, but not anything right now, unfortunately. So eventually it could, but I think it's going to take quite a bit of, you know, that's the thing. I really don't know what it could take to have just a simple NL versus AL feel, but it has to have that feeling where it's really distinctive. It doesn't really have that. I wish that it does. I wish that it could one day, but it just all feels like, you know, under WWE umbrella.
It can feel like that. It's just, it's a lot of things you can do for it to feel like that. You keep them separate. You have them travel separately. They don't make mention of anybody. It's just a lot
of
things you can do.
That's right.
Keep
them alive, baby. Yes.
Keep it alive.
Like, yes.
That way when they do come together, it makes it even more special.
Yes, exactly. Absolutely correct. Yeah, I think that if you keep kayfabe alive like that, I really think that it has the ability to do something really good. But if you just kind of keep everybody together and, you know, have pictures of Braun Strowman and Roman Reigns float around, you know, I think it just kind of kills the ability. You know, of course, you know, this isn't the 80s anymore. And we get that. And we're not saying get back to the 80s. We understand that. But the issue is that it doesn't really feel like Raw and SmackDown, especially it doesn't feel like Raw versus SmackDown, because it doesn't create the illusion of and it doesn't create the illusion that these are really, these are legitimately two brands that are in animosity with each other. You know, it doesn't have that feel to it, and that's I think it's to the, that makes it kind of I think it, the fans see right through it. I think that's
right.
What the problem
right.
lies.
Just yeah. had to do something drastic now with the fans. The fans are a lot smarter than what you give them credit for. You have to do something very drastic.
Right.
For it to seem
yeah.
like it's a split.
Right. Yeah, I think that's what you do. I think if they want to do that same, I mean, they've been plugging that on Survivor Series, you know. Oh, you know, the only time of the year where Raw and SmackDown goes head to head, and they keep plugging that same thing, that same Raw and SmackDown head to head type of thing, but it's like, still, we're still not buying it. You know, it's like, who really cares if Raw and SmackDown are going head to head if there's no type of feel that, you know, anyone cares about it. You know, that's the thing, is there's no distinction.
Yeah, I agree with you. Definitely agree with you. Maybe one day.
Yes, maybe one day. What's the next headline?
Got the next headline is okay, Great Balls of Fire. Gosh, I hate that name. Great Balls of Fire. Great Balls of Fire, and I believe No Mercy. Remember that theme song? That song will be excluded from the 2018 pay-per-view lineup for next year. Not sure if anybody's really going to care. I mean, granted, Great Balls of Fire this year had, I believe, The Miz. Yeah. Miz went against Ambrose for the IC title. Reigns went against Strowman in the Ambrose match. You had, actually, I'm sorry, am I wrong on that? And I do apologize. No, you're right. Yeah, Brock defeated Joe.
Brock defeated Samoa Joe We got quite a few people on the Wrestling Rumors live stream. We got Kara saying hello, first time watching. Hello, Wendy. Rob asks, who will Brock be fighting next? He's actually scheduled to come to. I think it's next week's Raw. Actually, I think it's going to be in Providence, Dunkin' Donuts Center, and I believe it's next week's Raw. So that's that. Let's address a bunch of these questions here. What's up, Eric asks, what's up with Paige and her new girls? Absolution. Matt Hardy should be the spokesperson for Absolution. Yes. Oh, Absolution. I definitely think he should be the spokesperson for that. let's see. I think Lesnar, Kevin says, I think Lesnar shouldn't be champion anymore. Him having a belt isn't helping Raw. I'm actually okay with Lesnar having the title.
Why not?
I think it helps. I think it helps kind of make other stars. I think it helps make other stars. I think people like The Miz, you know, it helped The Miz. It helped people like that. So I think, you know, there's advantages to it. Let's see.
The belt seems, the title means a lot more that you don't see Brock on a regular basis. The title holds a lot more weight when you don't see him as much. And as opposed to saying every week, he's defending it every week.
Right. The old Hogan tactic when you didn't see it every week, which actually helps substantially. Chris asks, when will Sting finally come back? Sting is the greatest of all time, but he's not coming back, unfortunately. You know, he's just not going to come back. I apologize. Sting's not coming back. Sting's not coming back.
So you said it about Brett.
You said about Brett?
He said Brett would never come back to WWE.
Nobody wanted Bret Hart to come back.
Nobody didn't. Nobody did.
He looks, speaking of the T-shirt Bret, that was quite sad. That was quite sad, and we hope that didn't happen anymore. T-shirt Bret, ladies and gentlemen. Got a bunch of questions here. Sean said, Lashley's contract is up with Impact Mania, him and Brock. Would I be interested in a Mania match with Brock Lesnar and Lashley?
The match itself would be well. I just think the build-up, because you got Heyman talks with Brock, Lashley, and I just was with Lashley last week, you know, kind of on the old side 2 weeks ago. Super nice guy, but his voice is so soft.
It is. I spoke to Lashley too. WrestleMania weekend, and just real soft voice.
His voice is soft, and it's like
his promos just aren't gonna work for him, unfortunately. And that was one of the biggest detriments for Lashley, because it's unfortunate for Lashley because he's a monster in the ring. I mean, this guy, and I think a lot of people. You know, unfortunately, rightfully so, criticize Impact Wrestling. But, you know, it's one of those things that, it really helped Lashley. It helped Lashley substantially. And it helped him hone his craft. So I think it definitely. As far as, Raw and SmackDown, it really doesn't matter, to be honest. It really doesn't show much of anything. There's no comparison there. All right, so let's tackle, as far as Great Balls of Fire, I knew that wasn't going to be around anyways. It just wasn't good enough, honestly, unfortunately. It was the one and done. I thought it was going to be. And then lastly, Rebbie Hardy and Sister Abigail. I think that we can have something going on here. I think that if they would have, it's one of those things that it's good that they didn't. It's good that they didn't bring in Sister Abigail. You know, of course, we don't want to wish ill on anyone as far as the health is concerned. But it's kind of good that they didn't bring him in, because it still kind of keeps that element alive. And I think with the Sister Abigail, if they did bring Rebbe in, they could, somehow bring in Sister Abigail, bring someone up from NXT or, bring, I think they were talking about one time, what's her name? Crowbar, Daphne. she was being considered for that. Yeah. So we've got a lot of people talking about Raw. Next pay-per-view coming to Canada. I don't know if there's any Canadian pay-per-views. There's usually one in Toronto. I think Survivor Series was in Toronto last year. I don't know anybody else. I don't know anything else. Let's address some of these questions. Usos versus the Shield equals money. That's what Zachary said. Usos actually did call out the Shield earlier today.
Yeah, I think early tonight. Yeah.
Yeah, I did see that on the video. Kara asks, in your opinion, whose talent is not being used correctly? That is a fantastic question.
Sami Zayn.
I would certainly say Bray Wyatt. I think Bray Wyatt should be babyface. I think his everything about his characters ran dry. I mean, you know, as far as Raw and SmackDown's concerned, you know, I like the Woken gimmick. I think you have to use that for Matt Hardy because, I mean, essentially, you know, you really don't have much else of a choice. I really don't think he was just to the point of just being super jobber, and it really wouldn't have worked out for him if he didn't do anything else, to be honest. So this, and I've called this on the show for weeks now, ever since Matt Hardy was, you know, by himself with Jeff. I called it. I said, no, we want to see. I want to see personally. I actually said, Broken Matt versus Bray Wyatt at WrestleMania.
Yeah,
archive. Go to the archive shows. I actually booked it. I booked it from like Rumble to Mania or something like that. I forgot what it was, but go to the archive shows. I booked the whole thing, and I definitely think that it's kind of coming to life.
You did.
Yes, I did. Yes, I did. I had a premonition. Yes, and I booked the match with me. I didn't reach any seven deities. I talked to one deity. let's see. Jonathan, do you think Brian will leave WWE? Robert kind of asked something about Daniel Bryan as well. Why Daniel Bryan on SmackDown is saying he's making all the matches and Daniel is backstage doing nothing. I think it boils down to a potential heel turn from Daniel Bryan, and I tweeted this. It seems as if we're going to see a Daniel Bryan heel turn. I don't want to see it, but it seems like they're trying to kind of freshen up the Raw and the SmackDown. The SmackDown GM and commissioner. It seems as if they don't want them to get along, perhaps, which is kind of odd to me because Stephanie McMahon.
Yeah.
And it's just really odd how they're doing that because Shane's a babyface, which Shane should be a babyface. Daniel Bryan should be a babyface too.
Yeah, true. I mean, you got to do something to change it up. I mean, like you said before, you make Daniel Bryan a heel. You know, Shane needs to be a babyface. But then again, it's this. Why do you have to make him a heel? Why can't you just have them have difference of opinion? You know,
right.
Why does everyone
and
have to
that,
go?
Exactly. That, they were kind of doing that for a number of weeks now. And just making Daniel Bryan a heel is just the honest thing to me. Like the yes chance, he's just a bona fide babyface. And it just doesn't make sense at all. I definitely hope that, I hope that it doesn't get too bad. So, yeah, I definitely hope it doesn't get too bad. All right, so ladies and gentlemen, let's get to the flavor of the week. Ladies and gentlemen, let's talk about the top five moments in Nitro history. Top five moments in Nitro history. We are getting to the flavor of the week, ladies and gentlemen. Here we go. Coming up soon.
It is now time for the flavor of the week.
All right. The top five moments in Nitro history. Top five moments in Nitro history. So, Evan Tech Prout, what is your top five moments in WCW Nitro history with the amazing Nitro music?
Cue the music. It's all good. Top five moments in WCW Nitro history, in my opinion, is Flying Brown versus Jason Thunder Liger at the debut of Nitro. Buddy Brown versus Hatch actually has footage of the three matches they did at a house show from a fan cam. They never was televised. But this match was groundbreaking. I thought it was great. Debut on Nitro, you got to see your first hand of cruiserweight action. They didn't really call it cruiserweight then, but it was just very athletic competition. The smaller guys. And people don't give Flan Bryan his credit. And I think even you mentioned, in the show last week that you and I did, I feel like if Flan Bryan didn't pass away untimely, he would have been the world champion too. But to me, top five. Five.
Yeah.
Flan Bryan.
So.
It's just like a.
Nice. I like it. So my top five is, well, my number five is DDP rejects the NWO offer. I think that was absolutely fantastic. I was a big fan of that. Big fan of that. I think that with that moment, you know, it was like, and I interviewed him on the show. I think that was definitely a defining moment for DDP, for those just joining in the live stream. Number five to me was when DDP, we're talking about the top five moments in WCW Nitro history, the top five moments in WCW Nitro history. Evan Tech Brown was talking about Flying Brian Pillman jumping over, what did he jump over again?
Brian Pillman against Liger.
Yeah, Brian Pillman against Liger. That was Evan Tech Prout's answer there. And the answer that I have is when DDP rejected the NWO offer. That was one of the defining moments for DDP. When I had him on my show, he was talking about how instrumental that was to helping him just kind of go to the next level, as far as that's concerned. What's your number four?
My number four is Sting. Shows up for the last time in his colors, wearing a red and white tights, and says, "You can consider me a free agent. And only thing that's in for sure is nothing's for sure."
Nothing's for sure.
Well, actually,
right.
I'm wrong. Actually, I'm wrong. I'll take it back. He did not say those words. That was the last time he showed up when he said, "Only thing that's for sure is nothing for sure," when he beat up Bogus Sting. I'm sorry. Fourth one is the last time he came out with the red and the white tights before he was Black and White Sting. And the very little things, and I believe, I can't remember if it was Bischoff that mentioned it to me or J.J. Dillon. So one of my favorites, by the way, is go back and watch it. When Sting came out and he wore the red tights and the white scorpion, his back was towards the hard camera the whole time. And it's the little things that you don't mention, that you don't notice. And he talked, had his back towards you. And Sting said the one thing, he said, for all of you that didn't believe me, you can stick it.
You can stick it.
And he did the same, he did the arm gesture, and he walked away.
Yeah.
And
yeah,
that was the one, that was number four for me, defining moment, because that's a moment I never forget.
Absolutely.
I thought he was going to go to WWF.
Number four for me, I just got to go back to the drawing board for me. When Luger debuted,
Luger.
Mall of America, Minnesota.
Catholic Church.
Right. Pastor Lex. when he came out and the clergy, sir. that was hilarious. When Luger came out, it's one of those things that, Luger doesn't get a lot of credit as far as just what he's done in the business. A lot of people have negative things to say about him, unfortunately. But he didn't do a lot, as far as just kind of turning the page, as far as, he was just on Raw, and he made the defection over to Nitro, and it really helped him. And, I think that was one of those things that it really set the bar for Nitro as far as being a competitive, competitive thing for a competitive brand to go against Raw. All right, what's your number three?
My number three is Goldberg defeats Hogan at the Georgia Dome. For the night that was, this one of the best match events ever. Hogan knew it was his time. Give it to Goldberg. This is memorable Nitro. This was great. It was great. I remember me and my grandfather watched it together, and even he got excited. Granted, Goldberg didn't keep the title too long, but downside, Goldberg did keep the title until, what we do not speak of happened at Starrcade. Yeah.
Now, just to be clear, people live stream, this is the top five moments in WCW Nitro history. I'm seeing Great American Bash. I'm seeing Ole Anderson gets kicked out of the Four Horsemen. That never happened on Nitro. Keith says Hogan Goldberg, and that was actually my number three as well. Goldberg defeats Hulk Hogan. And at Atlanta, it was amazing. The Georgia Dome, which is unfortunately now demolished, there was a bus. It was the local bus. the local.
man
tried to view the demolishing, and how poetic that a local bus blocks it. I thought that was hilarious. NWO debut and Sting's return, Chris says. There's a bunch of different really, really good ones here. What's your number three, Evan?
NWO Beatdown at MGM Studios.
They
beat him up. Ray just thrown into the trailer. Something my late beloved mother always remembered to the day she died and would laugh. And I just remember everyone thought it was real. The fight was real. I remember my mom ran into my grandfather's room and my aunt watched it. But the one thing I remember the most, even though they said what happened to Ray. Remember, Ray and Eddie and them said these words. It was three of them. They kept saying it was three. They were saving the fact that Hogan was in. So, and shout out to Savage doing the most random stuff. Savage jumping on top of the car, the limo, and he drove away with him.
Right.
Yeah, we still don't know what happened.
Yeah.
We still have no idea what happened.
Right. All right, real quick, my number two, then we'll get to a bunch of these here, which are some really good ones here, real quick. Number two, just Sting coming from the Raptors, black and white. Don't say my name or I'm going to get you in a scorpion death drop. As Rick Steiner and Hacksaw Jim Duggan, unfortunately, they fell victim to that. All right, number one.
My number one is the actual debut of Nitro. The Marlon America actual debut. There's no event. Now, you know, we could always say Sting and the Raptors and Goldberg and the Crazy, but no bigger event than the actual first Nitro. What started the wars, it changed wrestling history forever. If it wasn't for Nitro, Raw still would be called Team. Raw would still be Kate. We still have to watch that Don Westminster Dog Show. Well, would not be live every week.
Absolutely. My number one, real quick, is the NWR debut. You know who I am, but you don't know why I'm here. All right, real quick. Justin says when Sam McMahon showed up and started the invasion angle, that was really good. Good choice of that one. That was really good. That was a really good choice. I've got a comment here that said, boy, that was a really good one, too. Chris says when Rick Rude was on Nitro and Raw at the same night, that was a really good one, too.
Yeah,
Booker T dropping the N-bomb, that was not on Nitro.
It's a great moment, though.
He into Lon Dart Mysterio is what Jack says. Oh no, Danny, no, seven character, that was terrible.
He didn't say seven.
Seven. Emmanuel X Pac is Ric Flair comedy with the fake noise. Oh yeah, that was a good one too. The parody, the DX parody.
It would be an honor.
All right, ladies and gentlemen, thank you so much for sharing your top five moments in WCW Nitro history. I am Chris from the Zone. I am one of the editors here at Wrestling Rumors. Of course, Pancakes of Power Slam Show, 297 episodes. Go back and listen to Wes Briscoe. I interviewed him on the beginning of the show. We talked about Aces and Eights, talked about his time in FCW, talked about his time in Impact Wrestling altogether. And, ladies and gentlemen, Crave Wrestling. Follow us at Crave Wrestling. Follow us at Crave Wrestling. And join the Facebook fan page, Crave Wrestling. And until next week, ladies and gentlemen, thank you so much for supporting the show. 297 episodes. And until next week, ladies and gentlemen, enjoy your week of wrestling. God bless. On behalf of Evan Tech Proud with Better Than Matt Radio, you know who I am, but you don't know why I'm here. God bless you all. Enjoy your week of wrestling. God bless and have a good night. Goodbye.
Good night, guys. Love y'all.